Hi everyone, I'm Kara Winowski. I'm the marketing manager at Pomarco. I'm sitting down with Scott Miller. He's the sales and technical director at BCM Inks, and Dave Burgess, the sales director at JB Machinery, and John Rassetter, the VP of sales and marketing here at Pomarco. So we're sitting down just to kind of talk about some inks and how each of us coincide with inks. So, Scott, how do you begin the process to formulate the inks?
Oh, thanks, Kara. Really, there's when we start with a formulation, and BCM customizes almost all of our inks for specific press conditions, substrate, the actual color, in the analogs role, analogs. Volume or type of analogs role that's being used, type of doctor blade, all that's taken into consideration, and the graphics. So we're taking a look at all those different factors or all those different elements that can affect an ink, and then we're developing our formula based on those. So it's a prediction, and all of it really comes down to predicting the ink film thickness that's being applied to whatever that substrate is on that press. So it's highly important for us to have good, in order for us to have good prediction, we the output of the press has to be what we've initially, predicted. So by doing that, by customizing that ink, we're hoping to increase efficiency rates, have less ink downtime, either adjusting color, adjusting that ink for how it's performing on press. You got some presses out there running at speeds of 24,000 pieces an hour right now, so avoiding 10 minutes of adjusting an ink an hour or during a setup time equates to about 4,000 pieces not being printed. That doesn't even take into account the amount of waste that's attributed to making those color adjustments or making those ink adjustments for performance. So when we develop that ink initially, we're taking a look at all those variables, the analogs role, substrate, press, graphics, and then we're coming up with a formula that will optimize whatever those press conditions are.
Scott, I got a question. What are the challenges associated with using PMS Live versus the printed books?
Well, we've run up against this over the last 6 to 8 months pretty frequently. In some cases, not a problem. There are some colors that we're able to achieve easily. In other cases, it's been very difficult. If we're printing on a difficult substrate or a substrate that has a lot of absorbency, or we're using a analogs roll with a really fine ink film thickness that's being applied, we may not be able to achieve the chroma level required to hit that digital standard. So that does come into play, and it's going to take some education because this is, the digital library is now being used by a lot of companies on the branded side. It's easier for them to manage, but there's some education that needs to come into play here too. And that's been a little bit of a challenge. It's still relatively new, and it's, with a different substrate or with thinner ink film thickness that's being applied, we may not be able to hit that standard as close as what people want us to. We just have some limitations.
Scott, I have a question. If you know that the converter's running infrared dryers, how do your formulations change?
That really actually helps us because we can then make the ink a little more. We can slow the ink down. We can make the ink more soluble. You can take those dryers and really help that ink perform at its optimal level. If we don't have that, we may have to speed an ink up to dry in time to die cut in you know, print and die cut in line. And, yeah, you know, that's all going to be done by, you know, our vehicle that we're choosing. So we're probably going to choose a pretty fast drying vehicle, which could cause, you know, more time spent cleaning plates. You know, you're walking a very fine line there, Dave, when you know, getting that ink to dry quick enough to die cut in line, but yet not having it dry so fast that you're constantly having to stop the press and clean plates. When you have the dryers, you know, we can slow our inks down or make our inks a little bit more soluble, and then the dryers can, you can mess with the dryer, percentage to help, you know, help kind of tweak that drying time.
So there's definitely an advantage for the end user and for you, the ink company. I've always told our customers that the ink company feels it's a little easier to blend the ink for the dryer than it is without the dryer.
It is, especially when you get into some of these higher holdout papers too.
Yeah.
When you get in, you know, when you get into those, it even becomes more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it gives us a little bit more leeway, or a little, you know, we have a little bit more room for, you know, maneuvering those inks to perform properly.
And at the end, it's all about the speed. So you're able to get the maximum speed. You still have the drying capability with infrared or UV.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really what our goal is to, you always hear press ready inks, and that's really our goal, is to drop that ink in. It comes up to color, turn that press on at, you know, whatever speed that they want to run, and it performs at an optimal level.
If
all that's done and all the prediction ahead of time and discussions and homework's done prior to going unpressed, then you're successful. If that ink film thickness is changing, or the substrate's changing, or they're running it on a different analogs roll than what was previously discussed, or dryers not working, or, you know, they don't have a dryer, or they moved it, you know, they changed the sequence in which we discussed originally, all that can really affect the performance of the ink and ultimately the efficiency rates of that press.
Yeah. And similarly, we have a document that we call the fine printing guidelines that we typically send to every customer that's purchasing dryers. And it gives them a guideline for the ink, the viscosity, the pH, the way to run it, the dark to light, the analogs volumes. We have a target number in mind if we're going to be running on semi-coated or coated papers. Even the doctor blades, everything has an impact. And the end goal is that if the customer's got a full set of dryers, a full complement, and he adheres to these fine printing guidelines, then the likelihood he's going to be able to run that press at the rated speed. If, as you just said, that all changes, and instead of, let's say, a 5.5 BCM, we find that it's actually a 7.5 BCM analogs, then we've got to run it a lot slower, or the graphic isn't achievable.
Right.
So there is a fine line that everyone walks there in getting the maximum rated speeds out of the machines. And these fine printing guidelines that we have published aren't our rules. They're rules that we've developed over time in learning and seeing how different customers have behaved and the success rates of different customers out there. So it's been an information gathering process that tells us, hey, if we do all of this, then the likelihood of success is much greater. If you change one or two of those variables, then you're going to struggle a bit, or you're going to have to run slower.
Correct.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
It's a great place to start by establishing the criteria. But what we're also finding is that customers have to spend time, you know, managing the analogs volumes, so they're able to minimize that press side toning. And have a clear indication of when it needs to be changed. We've run multiple tests over the years, and one recent test was taking an analogs roll and then polishing down the abandoned roll to replicate wear. And, you know, we we through that polishing process, we and then printing it on press, in order to keep delta E within two inside the analogs can't wear more than 15%. So, and that's simulating what it would, you know, the wear characteristic over the course of time with, you know, Dr. Blake contact. What also happens, obviously, is, you know, plugging of the analogs rolls if they aren't properly cared for, which has the same effect. And if you take those, you know, if you take the comment you made earlier, Scott, about not being able to print X number of boards because you're down 10, you know, 10 minutes, pretty quickly that can contribute to significant costs per year and just press downtime, not alone, not to mention the rejects or the lack of productivity or product you can't sell if you don't produce it. So we like to really educate the customer on focus on volume, and one, maintaining it, two, knowing what the impact of not managing volume is so that they're maximizing their profitability and productivity.
Yeah. Really important. Look, we had a customer that holds us to some pretty tight. They monitor everything, and we were running machine downtime, ink related, was less than 2%. They had a very good PM program in place to manage and care for their analogs rolls, changing doctor blades, just, you know, a good preventive maintenance program in place. They moved away from that for some reason for a short period of time, and we saw ink-related downtime jump to over 7% in a very short time period. And our formulas hadn't changed. You know, these were formulas that were tried and true and had been running for years. And now they were having to adjust, you know, adjust color. They were having to, stop the press and manage that at a higher level, and it was causing them considerable more downtime ink related. It really wasn't ink related. It was that, you know, they shied away from that great program that they had in place, and they went back to it very quickly when they saw those numbers. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important, and we see it. We have, you know, formulas that have been running for at customers for a few years, and excuse me, if that ink film thickness changes due to lack of cleaning of the analogs roll or wear on the analogs roll or you know, all these different factors that can affect the ink film thickness, then it ultimately affects that downtime, and it affects that color. And now they're having to make adjustments to color when they didn't have to before. So.
Yeah, when we all pay close attention to viscosity, pH, temperature. JB has some solutions to managing that. What we see is, you know, small changes in viscosity contribute to a pretty significant increase in ink consumption as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the rule of thumb is 2 second increase in viscosity increases ink consumption by or ink cost by 10%, because now you're printing with expensive rich pigment rich inks versus printing with the right lower viscosity levels. Or
right, and your color will be affected too. So. You had talked earlier about, you know, holding to some very tight tolerances of running to a delta E of two. If pH and viscosity is not being monitored and maintained throughout a press run, your color can be drastically changing. And as all your amines are flashing off, which they're going to do that naturally. If those amines aren't being replaced and the viscosity starts getting thicker, your color is going to start printing darker. And if that's not being watched, I see a lot of companies that will measure that first you know, that first sheet and get everything dialed in. And then they turn the press on and they run for 2 hours and nobody does a single thing after that. And, you know, I know that if they measured a sheet midway through that press run and somebody has not been monitoring that ink, I know that that color is going to be darker. So yeah. It's important to maintain that. And Dave, you guys have a great solution for you know, helping with that whole, you know, monitoring and maintaining ink, you know, on a press.
Yeah, we came about it from a slightly different way to other suppliers. So what we are, our primary job with the system we call Ink Command is to control temperature, because we feel by controlling temperature, we also do control pH and viscosity. We keep the temperature even. You know, inks were designed to be run at 68 to 70 degrees. We see a lot of inks coming to the press over 80 degrees, particularly, I know summer's just about beyond us now, but midsummer, we just had a case on the West Coast. As you know, the West Coast right now is literally on fire. By within 1 hour of the press run, the customer was up at 85 degrees on his ink temperature. So the amines are flashing off. There's no question. Right. Your viscosities and your pHs are changing rapidly. So we've developed a system where we maintain temperature and then we monitor pH and viscosity, and where necessary, because unfortunately we don't have 100% closed loop. So you are going to get some changes in there, and then we add to make up either viscosity or pH where we need it. And we do that by auto dosing. In doing so, we take the job out of the operator's hands. And I think that's to us at JB, that's the biggest thing we can do for the Flexo world, is take all these decisions out of the operator's hands. How many press rooms have you wandered around where they've got a sign-off sheet for checking viscosity and pH that's hanging on the side of the press and is totally blank? Because just as it comes time to do it, somebody needs to go to the bathroom. So there's a jam that needs clearing. There's always something else that comes up. Right. So basically what we're asking the operator to do is simply set the temperature of the ink and at that point walk away. And we will take over and control throughout the run. And that's the key, like you said, Scott, because if you don't control it throughout the run, we're running bottom printers here for the most part. People aren't watching those sheets as intently as they should, and they're producing a lot of scrap. Right. So we're keeping it very consistent throughout the run, and we've had great success with it. We originally put one into, with our system, we can heat or cool. So we are, our kind of alpha systems were one in Florida, in central Florida. We wanted as humid and hot as we could get, and one in northern Wisconsin where it's dry and cold. And we've seen both ends. Mm-hmm. The one place we went to in Florida first, we saw the inks being brought to the press at 93 degrees. And the ink was turning almost to a sludge instantly. In Wisconsin, the opposite effect, there was inks being left on the dock and they're 50, 55 degrees. So our job is to either warm them up or cool them down. The vast majority are obviously chilling the inks, but our system will do it seamlessly. Again, the operator doesn't have to decide, should we heat them or should we cool them? They just plug in the temperature. And much like your thermostat at home, it just controls the temperature. Mm-hmm. And we actually build in a heater to the chiller so that we can control that temperature really tight. You know, your home thermostat allows that temperature to go either up or down a couple of degrees from the stated temperature, and then it kicks in and either cools it or heats it. With our system, we keep that temperature extremely level throughout the run, which is the key, because that when you think that ink's, you know, that ink's going through a lot of places, there's a lot of friction involved, there's a lot of heat that's building up on it. So we really want to keep it as straight line as we possibly can. And the adopters, the early adopters that have put the system in, have said it's seamless. So it really does help. I'd like to address a subject that goes back to analog ink volume. You know, from my standpoint, the high-end printers the 6-7 color high board line, that's actually relatively easy to predict what they're going to be doing every day. They're going to be printing on semi-coated or fully coated papers. You're going to be using finer analog rolls with lower volumes. Your, let's call them the traditional brown box printers, similarly, they're using lower screen analogs with higher volumes, and they're going to be printing the same papers every day. Mm-hmm. There are now more and more and more converters that are right in the middle, that are buying 4-5 colors, maybe 6 color machines, some with inside print, top print, some without, that are buying these machines on the come. They don't have a market and they're trying to build a market. So naturally they're starting off with uncoated papers, but sure as hell, a salesman walks in within a few days of the machine coming on and saying, can we run this chemi sheet?
Right.
That's where we're, and the other issue with these machines is that the analogs, they're relatively fast change, but the converters don't want to be changing analogs every 2 days, and they don't have a massive analogs inventory. Right. So that seems to be one of the classic struggles that's going on right now, is where do I pitch my analogs inventory? How do I communicate that with the ink vendor to make sure that I can literally cover the full gamut? Even though we know they're not going to be doing four color process, they're not putting down UV varnishes, but they're still covering a large gamut of paper types, substrate types, and printing types, you know, from going literally from a brown box printer one day to a graphics printer the next day and then back. What are you seeing out there?
Marco's standpoint, you know, we've had recent discussions, at multiple customers that are bringing in this new equipment. And it's always a challenge to find the specific engraving that's going to suit all applications or all print. So what we find is that we need to narrow down specifically what their work is today and work to the minimum volumes that are necessary to be able to get the solid ink coverage and hit color. But at the same time, provide a little more flexibility as they go up in graphic capability. And we reach a point where we're going to need to have that customer also spec out some spares and be able to swap rolls in and out. So, you know, maybe the first two downs are 6.5 BCM, or the last two downs are 6.5, and we have, you know, 4.5 BCM on the first few downs. For me, I always think about volume first, as we've been talking today, and then pick the screen rolling and pick the line count, because it's really all about the volume and the ink film thickness we're applying. Yeah. What we also find is that, you know, the eFlow technology, that extended cell, gives us the ability to increase the line count on the analogs roll by 40 to 50% over a conventional 60 degree engraving, which gives us some additional flexibility on the screen work as we start to go into the screen.
Yeah.
Higher line screens. So can one analogs roll do everything? Absolutely not. But what the challenge is to make sure we clearly understand what the customer's current need is and where they're going to or hoping to go to with generating new business for them, and then identifying what that mix of analogs rolls so that they get the right spares as well to be able to go into more of the graphics work.
Yeah.
Is that what you're seeing, Dave?
Yeah, I totally agree. What we see obviously is if they're right now 95% uncoated papers, and maybe, you know, there's an opportunity for 5% coated, then you've got to build the press around the coated papers. And for those rare occasions when they're running the uncoated jobs, you've got to run the press slower. There's really not much alternative. Some of the jobs they may not be able to do at all, and some of the jobs they may just have to run them slower. But it's a tough one to relay that message, when they're putting in a multi-million dollar piece of equipment and a salesman is very excited about, you know, the possibilities of bringing in this, that, and the other. So there's definitely some compromise that has to go on here. I mean, if you look at what we're doing in the with the dryers, our job is actually very, very simple. Our job is simply to remove the moisture in the ink and leave a single homogeneous layer of ink, a continuous layer of ink on the sheet. So we just got to drive away the moisture. The more moisture there is, the harder that is to do. That's really it in a nutshell. So the more they can understand about their business and their mix, and the more they're willing to do things like buy spare rolls. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that that's the mindset, because of course, in corrugated, let's face it, we've all had customers with multiple old S&S's, Langston's, etc., that three and four colors, and all these years they've carried one spare roll. And the only reason they've carried a spare roll is in case they ding or damage the one of the rolls in the machine, and then they switch them out.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the corrugated industry is graphically is moving into a space where the wide web paper industry has been for quite some time.
Yeah.
And there is no wide web paper printers that don't have a wide portfolio of Hanlox rolls and varying volumes in order to be able to hit the graphics. So, you know, we're limited by the equipment design to some degree.
Right.
It makes it more of a challenge, but in order to be able to get the graphic capabilities, there needs to be a full range of volume, you know, analog roll BCM in order to be able to hit those targets. You know, if you think about some of the real high graphics printers that are out there, we have customers are running anything from 1.8 BCM rolls all the way down to 9 BCM rolls. Same press, but they have a desire to print 150 line screen on Kimi, and at the same time, really heavy solid coverage and right. You know, coatings. So there needs to be a fair amount of education, I think, in order to be in advance of the purchase of the equipment or as it's being installed to capture what that customer's desire is. We also publish a selection guide for analog rolls, volume and line count to help a printer when they look at, you know, whether they're using coated liners or uncoated liners and what the graphic demand is, to help get them into a range. And no two printers are the same. Yeah. Everybody's different.
Right. And it's hard to predict what, you know, especially some of the, you know, with the e-commerce boxes and the inside outside printing presses that are, you're seeing more and more of them, you know, it's really hard to predict when they're installing that press, what type of work they're going to have, what type of work they're going to generate in the next year, year and a half to 2 years. Yeah. I don't think they know. I don't. And so, you know, it's a big guessing game at first. You know, this is where we think we're going to live. But, you know, a year into it, they're attracting a lot of different business that they didn't anticipate. And some of the, you know, whether the press was, you know, now they're wanting to run, you know, Kimi inside outside, you know, and that press really initially wasn't set up to do that. Maybe didn't have the dryers in all the stations that they needed, or you know, the analogs configuration they chose initially isn't really ideal for what they're, you know, where the work has now steered them. So
yeah,
and we're seeing a lot more of that with the, you know, with that e-commerce business. You know, some of it's just solid print, and other it gets really, really delicate and really high end. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So let me switch gears if I can for just a minute. You know, we've talked about specking out the ink and making sure that it's proper formulation when it gets to press. We've talked about selecting the analog rolls from a volume standpoint to be able to get the to print properly. managing the ink viscosity, pH, temperature, and then being able to dry that ink, you know, whether it's conventionally or infrared or UV. The other big thing that we're seeing is, particularly with COVID, Pomarco does an awful lot of analogs roll audits. We've now had training films put together to help customers do their own audit if their plant's closed to visitors, non-critical repair type visits. Our team is still out there doing an awful lot of audits. I think what we're going to experience for some period of time is continuing to educate our customers on keeping these rolls clean so that, you know, they've got wear to worry about, but they also have plugging to worry about. And, you know, we're coming out of summer. It's likely that a lot of these rolls are plugged because, you know, I still have customers who are using ice bottles in their ink kits to keep the temperature of the ink down.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be able to ensure that customers understand that volume is critical and they need to keep these rolls clean. So one of the things that we found to really help is the cleaning plate. I don't know if you gentlemen have seen it before, but
yeah.
This product has been, it's made by a fellow out of Chicago. He worked in an ink department for one of the integrateds, and by the time that he got tired of trying to figure out how to keep analog rolls clean, so he went on a path of developing this product. It's a microfiber pad mounted on a printing plate carrier. It's loaded into the press the same way that you would a printing plate. You cycle a soap and water solution through the ink pump, the hoses, the chamber, onto the analogs roll, and through impression between the analogs and this cleaning pad on the print cylinder, it scrubs the analogs roll. It's the only thing that we've found that gets the analogs roll clean without operator involvement,
right?
You know, hand scrubbing. And with today's lockout and tagout, you really can't get that analogs roll clean by hand. And Scott, I guess the other thing, what we're finding is there are some customers out there that are still just using water to clean the analogs roll to rinse.
Right.
And what we found is that pH shift also promotes plugging.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your recommendation when you're working with customers? What do you recommend to help them keep those rolls clean?
We recommend just that. John, I've seen this. The other big advantage to that microfiber plate is that you don't have to shut down the press. You can be running, if you have a three color press, you can stick it on one station if you're running a two color job, and you're cleaning while you're running the job. So it doesn't require any downtime. It's very effective in maintaining a roll. But then if they don't have that, we suggest, you know, flushing the system and cleaning with just a soap and water, and just doing that religiously from setup to setup. When you're flushing that ink out, you know, thoroughly clean that entire station. The microfiber plate that's out there, I think is the best solution I've seen in years.
We're getting some really good results out of that product, and it really does help improve consistency.
Yeah,
and it's all about consistency.
And it's full across the cylinder, so you're cleaning 100% of the analog roll with that microfiber plate. It's full width.
It is. Yeah, we are. We're cleaning the full analog roll. And as Scott had mentioned, as the press is running, or it can be set up to be done, you know, offline as well.
So, right.
And it's really slick, because when you take it off to now mount the job or mount the next set of plates, it's clean. because not only does it clean the analog scroll, it self cleans the microfiber pad, the cleaning plate, and that then gets put into the rack along with the rest of the printing plates and till it's ready to be used next time, and it can circulate it throughout the press room.
Sure.
And it's very durable too. I mean, I've had some customers claiming they've got in excess of 1 million revolutions on it, and it still looks, I mean, they've shown it to me, it still looks brand new. So, I mean, it's very, yeah. It's very durable. So great solution.
Yeah, we haven't had anyone tell us yet that they've worn it out, and it's right. been 3 years in the market now. So,
right.
You know, for us, everything is really about focusing on trying to maximize the value to the customer for what they're spending with us. I know the same thing is applied to each of you, but if we're able to provide that education and we're able to help customers reduce downtime, they're going to be a lot more profitable. You know, a couple stats that I use, you know, that $500 an hour press time, and in many cases that's pretty conservative.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making one ink adjustment per job because of the analog scroll's plugged or worn or improperly spec'd, and it takes, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, and you do 50 jobs a month, you know, you're looking at $150,000 or more dollars a year in potential savings.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take Dave's comment about managing ink viscosity. That's a huge contributor per deck, you know, mm-hmm. per year, probably to the tune of, you know, $5,000 a print station for every shift that it runs.
Yeah, so
big dollars to be saved.
Right.
Oh, there are, and I think I mentioned earlier, our quest as a company is to take as many of the decisions out of the operator's hands as we can, so that we can automate this process. The ink command runs seamlessly on its own. All we're doing is programming the temperatures. We're actually working on a predictive drying model that, instead of the operator wondering, should I be running the dryer at 60%, 70%, 100%, that when we plug in a recipe that says this is the paper type, this is the analog volume, and these are the conditions, off we go. You know, we're taking those decisions. That's the attempt, to take all of these decisions out of the operator's hands, to automate as much of this as we can. You know, a lot of these operators now have gone from 1985, 1990 machines to 2020 rocket ships.
Right.
And the technology has changed just so incredibly that they've got so many things that they've got to do. So if we can reduce what they have to do, you know, you can only imagine that a $5-6 million high board line 8-color machine that they're still by hand checking pH and viscosity with a stopwatch and making an addition every 15 minutes, 30 minutes in the summer, every hour in the winter. It almost sounds ridiculous.
Right.
We've got to automate that process so that when they're making these long runs, they're producing good product, they're producing it at good speeds, and they're not producing much of, if any, waste. That's right. Really the key, because the waste is an enormous cost in a current.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially some of these presses that are running, you know, 20,000 pieces in 24,000 pieces an hour. I mean, if you turn that press on and just run for, you know, 1 minute to check color, to check how the ink is performing, if it's tracking, or if you're rubbing, or whatever the case may be, you're blowing through 200 sheets
yep.
just that quick. And you do that five times, you know, you've gone through 500 sheets in a matter of, you know, 500 to 1,000 sheets in a matter of minutes. And I don't think people are looking at it that way. You got waste, you've got downtime, you got product you should be running correctly. You got, rejections that are that can potentially be coming back to you. You also have inconsistency from job to job when you're running like that. And I think that's another big thing is, you know, you have these branded customers having strict guidelines and strict tolerancing on color, yet you know if your inks are not performing or color is not predicted properly because of some outside factor, or it's changing from press run to press run, that color consistency that's critical is all over the board from run to run to run. And there's a lot of time being spent to try to get that color back into its spec. And it's huge. It's a huge amount of money over the course of a year.
Yeah. And you know, as we're now going into the cooler months, presumably the warmer months are behind us. What's interesting with us, we get more calls starting soon and going through the winter, telling us that their sheets aren't drying the way they did in the summer.
Right.
So much of that is due to the ambient temperature of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
It is also down to maintenance. You know, what you can get away with on a dryer in the middle of summer when the ambient temperatures in the plant are 120 degrees, you can't get away with when it's 70 degrees or even 60 degrees in the plant. But one of the things that we do stress in the fine printing guidelines is that the paper temperature should be at least 70 degrees, which means if you're running it tomorrow, you've got to bring it into the plant tonight from that trailer that's sitting on the outside of the plant with stacks of paper in it. That's something that we very commonly see. And it's surprising that not many people recognize that. But the center of that stack of sheets, I don't know, it could be 60 degrees, could be 62 degrees, could even be colder if it's been left outside in a trailer in a New England winter's night. So you know, those are the sort of variables we've got to get by. And again, there's your $5-6 million machine that's struggling for the first 2 hours of the day to produce product. What's the cost of that? So there are some things that collectively as vendors, suppliers to this industry, that we really need to target and focus with the converters to make sure that they're following a good set of guidelines to get to, as you say, Scott, a predictable outcome.
Right.
That's really what we're trying to do at the end of the day, is give them a predictable outcome that commercially they can make money from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For sure.
There's a lot of variables, but we can all do our part, and we're all interrelated here. And I think one of the things that you said, John, is really key. Either before you get the machine in, we should all be sitting around the table with the customer. If things are starting to come apart, we should all be back sitting around the table with the customer and going back to where we were before the machine came in. I think that level of, and maybe with COVID, we can't do that on a personal basis, but we can certainly do it the way we're doing this. I think getting back to basics so often would save so much time and effort.
I agree 100%.
And frustration.
Yeah.
So anyone who sees this and has any additional questions, I'm sure it can reach back through Kara. So she'll be providing all of our contact details. And we welcome, you know, anyone who would like to continue this discussion to reach out to the four of us and ask any questions this discussion might have triggered.
Definitely. Thank you guys so much for sitting down. This discussion was great. It was great to hear from all of you.
Thanks, Kara. Thanks for setting it up.
Thank you, Kara.